Hey, this is Sean James. I love soul music, strong drinks, and talking with Dan Dunn on What We're Drinking.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn. Oh, yeah.
What we're drinking, or what I'm drinking anyway, is barrel whiskey pear brandy finish. Oh man, it's good stuff. Barrel's one of my favorite brands. This is from their private release collection, and I put a little rock in there. And I gotta tell you, it is delicious. It's a blend of Kentucky whiskeys, the oldest being an 18-year-old, and they finish it in a pear brandy cask, and it is fantastic.
All right.
I want to start by wishing everyone a safe and happy Thanksgiving. To those of you listening to this episode after the fact, well, I hope you had a safe and happy Thanksgiving. Coming up in a few minutes, I'll be speaking with Mark Sansom. He's the content editor for the world's 50 best bars. This is the definitive list of the world's finest drinking venues. We're talking about craft cocktail places, not dive bars. We're talking about nice places. I've been doing this since 2009, and the 2020 list was just announced. They did a virtual ceremony, and Mark is going to tell us all about that. If you like bars, you want to stay tuned for that one. So we just had our 100th episode. This is our episode number 101, or 100th, meant that the show has officially hit puberty. To commemorate that occasion, we've launched a new website, whatwe'redrinking.com. Now, it's still a work in progress. Eventually, we're going to have a whole bunch of stuff, but right now, it's there, and it's up, and it's operating, and I want you to go and sign up for our newsletter. Now, I know you're thinking, oh, just what I need, more mail in my inbox, but I'm telling you, this newsletter is going to have exclusive content. We're going to be doing contests, prizes, blogs from some really great writers, some maybe even some video content that you haven't seen anywhere else. So get on, go to our new, it's really easy. Just put your name and your email address and you're signed up for our newsletter. We also have a new Instagram account just for this podcast. Before we were going to my Instagram, which is at the Imbiber, and I still invite you to go there, but we also have one. The podcast has its own Instagram. It's all grows up, and that Instagram account is WWD_podcast. That is the What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn podcast is WWD_podcast. Also have a new Twitter account. That's WWD_pod. I guess we couldn't get the cast part on Twitter. It's a solo show only on Twitter. So yeah, that's what's happening. Let me have a little bit of whiskey here. Hold on. So, since this episode is, we're going to be talking to Mark for 50 Best Bars, I thought I would tell you a story. A story about an otherworldly, or I guess better yet, an afterworldly bar that I dreamed up where all my dead literary heroes congregate to wet their whistles. And the name of the bar is The Epilogue. The regulars like to say it's located at the end of a very long, very subjective, and perhaps even run-on comma splice sentence. They're a grizzled lot, the habitués of The Epilogue. A lot look a bit worse for the wear, but somehow they wear it well. These colorful ladies and gentlemen come from all over the world and from all walks of life. It's no wonder they all wound up hunkered down at the same dog-eared watering hole. We'll start with Scott out of St. Paul, Minnesota. A little guy, but throws them back like one of the big boys. At least he tries to. For being honest, though, he's a bit of a lightweight, and he gets real temperamental with a few gin rickies in him, which is to say every damn day and thrice on Sundays. To hear him tell it, Scott comes from a well-to-do family, but I ask him about his upbringing or his ex-wife, and he clams right up. Always wanted to know about that ex-wife, They say she was a real live wire. Of course, if Scott's around, Ernest can't be far away. Hails from the suburbs of Chicago. Folks call him Papa. Big dude. Cuts a romantic figure if you ask the ladies around here. And sure, everybody at the Epilogue has a great story to tell, but few can spin a yarn like Papa. I mean, everyone has fish stories, but Papas have real fish in them. Tonight, it seems he's moving away from the whiskey, celebrating the new open-door Cuban policy with memories of the El Floridita and his beloved double daiquiris. Those are 2.5 jiggers of rum, juice of 2 limes, half a grapefruit, a bit of maraschino, shaved ice. Damn. Larger than life. Just like Papa. You get 3 types of conversation at the Epilogue. There's the kind that ends in sex, kind that ends in a fight, the kind that never seems to end, like Dorothy Parker's. At the Epilogue, she always seems to be 4 martinis into the night, but the way she mumbles is endearing, and anyone within earshot is sure to lean in for fear of missing out on one of her bon mots. But you can't talk about mumbling in the Epilogue without talking about Dr. Gonzo. Can't miss him. That's his red convertible parked on the sidewalk out front. A lot of people say you shouldn't smoke in bars anymore, but shouldn't isn't in the doctor's vocabulary. Guy takes a Chivas Rocks and a Dunhill and several too many trips to the bathroom with his attorney. Chandler and Fleming keep themselves at a booth in the back. A bit aloof, both of them. Mysterious bastards. Their fascination with crime knows no bounds, nor does their appreciation for fortified liquid. Chandler alternates between gimlets and straight bourbon. Fleming's a martini guy, though. Stirred, or was it shaken? I swear I was ready to leave 2 drinks ago, but shit, Hank came in. Started saying those hard things in that simple way. Even Papa clams up when the old guy holds forth. Then Hank did what Hank does. Ordered drinks. For all his friends. Then he moved off to talk to Chris Hitchens, the British dude by the window. Something about the difference between a democracy and a dictatorship. Chris has only been coming to the Epilogue for a few years, but you'd never know it from the way he acts. Still believes in the political potential of America, though he seems to celebrate the virtues of a godless country more than most. Many of the regulars have a go-to beverage, but Chris is an equal opportunity imbiber. Wine, beer, liquor, hell. Set him up and he'll knock him down, so long as it's the good stuff. He only goes for the good stuff. And you already know his response if you try to buy him a shot of well liquor. Cheap booze is a false economy. We can't all be sweethearts. Take Bill Faulkner, voted least likely to be called a sweetheart. Always moaning about wanting to go back to Yaknapatawpha County. And who the hell is this Absalom guy anyway? Besides, he's always sat out at that side table with Tennessee, drinking Vu Carrés and moaning about Stella. But like any joint that's been around a while, melancholy sticks to the place like a highball glass on a dirty bar. Just about everyone who comes through the door is damaged goods. Some are destined to spend eternity nursing wounds that will never heal, blind to the limits of whiskey's curative powers. Alcohol may well be the anesthesia by which we endure the operation of life, but for the habitués of the Epilogue, it's the poison that never quite finishes the job. The best and worst thing about the Epilogue is that there's no such thing as last call, so you have to make a point of not overstaying your welcome. Otherwise, someone might inquire whether you might be better at home down the road a ways, swilling macro brews at the Comma Splice Cafe or sipping yesterday's wine at the dangling participle there. But I'll let you in on a little secret. You can spot the regulars at the Epilogue. They're the only ones the bartenders ever let pay. Blow-ins like me pull out their wallets and our money's no good. One day, though, I hope I'll hunker down and buy a few rounds. For all my friends. At least, it's fun to think so. Hey, let me ask you something. What kind of underwear are you wearing right now? Does it feel like you're sitting in a heaven cloud? No? Well, maybe it's time for a change. Imagine how much more badass you'd feel right now if your undies were covered in pandas or sushi rolls. Mine are, because I wear MeUndies, which offers classic colors to ridiculous prints, all so you can fully express yourself in your own unique way. Speaking of which, MeUndies Gives is an initiative that supports those who have systemic barriers to their self-expression. By shopping MeUndies, you support causes such as LGBTQ+ communities, mental health and well-being, and women's rights. And MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. Any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping. Go to MeUndies.com/drinking. That's MeUndies.com/drinking. MeUndies believes you and your butt deserve comfort inside and out. And me, well, I just like saying the word butt. Joining me now is the former global editor of Food and Travel, which is the world's leading gastronomic travel magazine, but his current gig is the content editor for the world's 50 best bars and the world's 50 best restaurants. Welcome to the show, Mark Sansom. How are you, man?
Very well indeed. Thanks, Dan. Thank you for having me on today.
It's good to see you. 50 best bars. So you, this is a big deal in the world that I inhabit, that you inhabit. The world's 50 best bars 12th annual awards ceremony took place virtually on November 5th. And you guys have been doing this since 2009, been publishing a list. It's the definitive list of the world's best drinking venues, voted on by an academy of over 500 experts. Am I right on that?
Spot on, yeah. 540 experts this year that make up the academy.
You come out with these bars. Now, let me explain to everybody listening out there. I've been writing about spirits for about 21, 22 years, and it's a very insular community, and especially when we're talking about what you would call the craft cocktail world. And that's what we're talking about here for these bars. Like Spike's Corner Bar isn't going to be on this list. Could be a great bar. You and I, I'm sure, Mark, could go into any pub in London, which is where you're coming from now, and probably have the time of our lives. But a bar like that's not going to make it onto this list. So what are we talking about? What kind of bars do make it onto this, to the world's 50 best bar list?
So the world's 50 best bars list, if you think of, as we've just discussed, there's 540 people who cast a vote. Well, they actually all have 7 votes. 4 of those votes have to come from, or can come from, within their territory or country where they live, but 3 have to come internationally. So of those 7 votes, we generally get a great snapshot of the global bar scene as it is. And those 540 experts who go into to curate those votes, they're the leading lights in the global bar scene. That's made up of bartenders, drinks writers, and drinks historians all over the world, and people who basically fly around the globe looking for the best cocktails. So we put a lot of trust in those guys who make their 7 votes, and then basically set the agenda for the 50 best bars for the following year.
This year was a challenge, I guess, but you pulled it off. Let's talk about doing the first one that you've ever done. Normally, you would have the ceremony in, where would it be, in London?
It's been in London, yeah, for the past 12 years, yeah.
So you had to do it virtually this year. How did that go?
God, so it was an interesting process. I can certainly tell you that it was. We had lots of firsts this year for the world's 50 best bars. The academy, which we put together of 540 people, was gender balanced, 50-50 men and women for the first time this year. And then it came round to February, and we realized in Europe, as I'm sure you guys did in the States, that this thing coming down the line was going to be pretty darn serious. It's going to affect all of us and our ways of lives in quite a significant fashion. So we had a meeting, and obviously, like you, as you said at the beginning, at the top of the show, we run the 50 best restaurants alongside the world's 50 best bars. We weren't going to be able to put on a ceremony where 1,000 people in the industry come together, we realized quite quickly. So it came to March, and we had a big meeting with everyone in my team and a few other people who are involved in that as well. And we thought, what can we do to serve best the hospitality community, which we consider ourselves a part of? And we kind of split that into 3 key areas. We thought, right, what do they need? People who are working in bars and restaurants at the moment, they need support and information. So we put together a content hub where people could sort of share stories and information. We gave advice from experts in particular fields to sort of speak to one another and let people know how the pandemic was progressing in different parts of the world. And then we thought the main thing they need is money, cold hard cash, which they can use to stay in business, support their employees right now in the immediate. So we put on a number of fundraising initiatives. The first thing we did was we created a cookbook, Home Comforts, which sort of brought together the world's best chefs and bartenders. So the chef would provide a recipe. We asked 50 of the world's top bartenders to produce a cocktail pairing to go with that. And that was
super successful. Now, where can people get that book?
So that's online. That's on our website, 50bestbars.com. So, I mean, that's still available. It's $10. We try to keep the cost pretty nominal. So anyone can access it and start cooking. Like,
that's amazing. So it's a digital copy then, right?
Yeah, a complete ebook. Yeah, it's our first ebook. I'll give you the hookup on the, if you could put that on, that would be amazing.
Now, just so we're clear here, so Mark said it's worlds50bestbars.com and the 50. So it's worlds and then 50bestbars.com. That's where you want to go, right?
It is indeed, yeah.
Mark, I just want to make sure people aren't going to, 50 Best Bars, which is 50. That's 50 Cent's favorite bars. You don't want to go there. I mean, you could. I mean, they're great places.
I'm sure he knows good bars as well. I'm sure he's got a great
set. Well, speaking of great bars,
50bestbars.com.
I can't handle the suspense anymore. Tell us, Mark, what is the number one bar in the world for 2020?
The world's number one bar this year is the Connaught Bar in London.
Oh, how convenient that it happens to be in your hometown.
I knew you'd say that. Well,
funny business going on there? What's happening?
I can assure you it's our voting process is audited by Deloitte, and we're as clean as a whistle. But last year, Dante in New York City was the winner. So we it's generally shared between New York and London as the number one bar.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. So this is one of my – I want to talk about this. So – on the list, and we will talk about the Connaught Bar in a second, but on the list, Dante was the best bar in America. It was number two on the overall list. And then there were four other bars on that list from the States. Attaboy was at number 12, Nomad Bar, number 13, Katana Kitchen at number 16, and Employees Only at number 38. Now, there's something that those bars all have in common. What is that?
They serve fantastic cocktails.
And what else?
I mean, that's a tough one. I mean, the excellent choice of glassware.
Yes, yes, yeah. Well, what Mark's dodging here, they're all in New York City. And so it begs the obvious question here, Mark. You do know there are other cities in America that have great bars, right?
We're well aware of that. Yeah, indeed. Actually, in the Academy this year, we split America, North America into five key regions. So there's Mexico down in the south of that, and then the America proper is split into four. So we've got the Northeast, South, Midwest, and West, and then Canada is its own jurisdiction, and they're all split into have the same number of voters. But it turned out this year that everyone voted New York bars on top.
Everybody went New York. No, and I bring that up not to give you shit necessarily, but it is a common beef, and especially our big thing over here, Tales of the Cocktail, and you got the Spirited Awards. It's something that I hear people complain about is there is the New York bias, and especially within the bar community in America. I live in Los Angeles. There are a lot of great bars here. San Francisco tends to represent pretty well in these competitions. But let's face it, it's places like Chicago there's a few. I mean, you've got Denver's got Williams and Gray. Is it that the bars there are that much better, or is it just that New York is such an iconic place that the judges are naturally gravitate towards it?
I'd certainly say that it's not the case that there aren't great bars elsewhere in the US. I'd certainly suggest that your listeners look to another list we produce, which is the 51 to 100 list, it sort of extends beyond the 50. And that's where you'll find lots of bars from other cities in the States. There's a great new entry, Pacific Cocktail Haven in San Francisco. I don't think that's too far from you, Dan. But what it kind of does suggest is our voters, they tend to be rooted for when they're traveling for guest shifts, exploring new bar scenes. They'll generally tend to be rooted through the key sort of cosmopolitan metropolitan hubs, which are New York, Berlin, London. So they might not always get the opportunity to travel into further reaches of any of the countries, to be honest with you. But it's all about that country's voting base to make sure they're voting for what they think are the best purveyors of their country's bar scene at that particular time.
Well, this also brings up a sort of a disconcerting element to this. I mean, I was reviewing the list of the bars, and there's so many great places. There's got to be a real fear, I guess, that some of these places might not be here. you know, they might not survive what we're going through, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean,
do you know of any that are, you know, that haven't, that have already gone under? Or?
So only one, actually. In curating this year's list, I personally got in touch with all 100 bars who are on the 1 to 50 and 51 to 100 lists to speak about whether they what their situation was, if we could offer a grant from our 50 Best Recovery Grant Scheme, which we were raising the money for with a cookbook and an auction. And not only one of them came back saying that they had no plans to reopen, and that was a bar in Miami called La Sirenuse, which was a hotel bar, which was doing great things, but they decided that it wasn't the right for them to continue the business. But every other bar on the list is planning to reopen, or has reopened, or is shut temporarily through COVID. So, yeah, we're pretty confident that these bars are working so darn hard to keep it going and provide a drinking destination for people when they need them the most.
There's also this idea, and I hope this doesn't sound cold or callous, is that, let's face it, this winter's coming and we're going to lose a lot of places. A lot of places are not going to make it through this, right? But at the end of this, there's going to be opportunity. And I think you're going to see new styles of bar. Would you agree with, I think, so to give you for example, in Los Angeles, oddly enough, you know, I'm on the west side of Los Angeles in Venice. There weren't a lot of places that offered great outdoor drinking spaces. You would think there were, but they're just, the city would be very, you know, maybe it's the city with permitting and whatnot. Now, bars have had, and restaurants have had to pivot and fence in their parking lots. And that's how all these places out here are staying open in warm weather places. You know, and I think that's going to be the new normal. Now, I think you're going to see a whole new era of bars and restaurants are going to emerge from COVID, the way that business is done. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. If there's one thing that this pandemic has shown us, it's how creative the bar industry and bartenders can
be.
All bars have pivoted to ready to drink cocktails and delivery cocktails. And that's not just in the States and Europe, that's all over the world. It's now become a revenue stream, which isn't going to go away. And similarly, everyone has had to pivot or look at what they've actually got in their infrastructure that they can turn into something, a new hospitality experience. And I'm very surprised to hear what the situation is that with you guys in LA, but likewise in London, where we aren't quite blessed with as good a weather. Similarly, they've pivoted to outdoor dining in Soho, which is in the heart of London. People are now taking up tables on the street, and that's going to go on through the winter when we get out of our second phase lockdown on 2nd of December, hopefully.
Now, how does that happen, though, Mark? Like, it's going to get colder in London. How are they going to stay outside? Just heat lamps? Is that the idea?
I've seen all sorts, actually, and seen all crazy things discussed. I mean, there's heat lamps, I think, are probably the main thing. The British temperament of staying outside until you have to go in will probably come in handy. But there are also, I've seen like igloos, I've seen little pods with which can host like two or three guests, some even six, where the bartenders will bring the service out to them. But yeah, I think we're approaching a winter, as you, I think you alluded to, of discontent, but with real sort of real challenges and people prepared to face those challenges. Look, they've already faced, bartenders particularly have faced so much in the last 8 months. I think another 2 months hard graft through the winter, and hopefully we might be through the worst of it and start seeing some positivity. But I think, as you said, I think we're going to see some really innovative venues come out. People are going to be leaving offices in city centres, houses, flats, all sorts of potential opening spaces become available, and we're going to see a really interesting new generation of bars, bar owners and operators. It's obviously very sad at the moment, and we're not over the worst of it yet, but there are exciting potential future things ahead which are going to reinvent the industry.
Now, talking about these awards, 50 Best Bars, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, and this is sort of something that's sort of stuck in my craw for a while. I always kind of felt like not only these things, but also cocktail competitions, I'm always concerned, and how would you respond to people like me that had this concern, that when you pit bars, bartenders against one another like this, what you ultimately wind up with are a bunch of unhappy bar folks. And then you got a handful who are just another win or two away from getting gigantic heads if they're not already there. Is that, how do you respond to that? And I get it. And by the way, I'll bitch about anything. I'm just going to let you know that. I understand. Now, if I won an award, I'd be like, it's great. You know, of course, a podcasting award. Yes, I'm the best. But no, we all know that, you know, Dante is an amazing bar, and I love that place. I've been, when I go to New York, I go to Dante, but there's 100 other bars that I could say are as good. And you get that too, right? But that's the same thing with the Academy. I'm now refuting my own argument. Let me argue with myself now, Mark. But go ahead. No, you pick it up from here.
I totally understand what you're saying, but excellence is celebrated in every industry, from architecture to soccer to American football. There's generally an end of seasons awards. And what we're trying to do with the world's 50 best bars, we want to give a reliable list of 50 bars that patrons can visit and be guaranteed and assured of a good service and a great night out. That's all we're trying to do with the list of the top, the world's 50 best bars. We're looking to provide a list, and we do that with the fairest and most equitable situation that we can in terms of the voting academy that we have in place. And we believe that there's no better way to create a fair and equal system to provide that list.
Now, fans of the list, is there any sort of a club, or I would imagine something like this must have popped up where people hit all 50 bars?
Yeah, there's actually a couple. I don't think anyone has made it through last year's top 50, but in previous years, actually more so with the world's 50 best restaurants, there's actually one guy, Paul Grinberg, who's been to every one of the world's 50 best restaurants, and it's very interesting to hear. But no person I'm aware of has been to every bar in the world's 50 best bars. So if any of your listeners are out there, I'd love to speak to you. Or if you've been to any more than, I think the most I've heard is 40. So if you've been to more than that, then please do hit me up.
Well, I'd like to think of myself, you know, I'm in this business and I've been doing this for a long time, but I'm looking at the list right now. Now, I've been to, I think, all of the ones in the U.S., but I'm looking at some of the places on this list. And I got to tell you, I'm just going to throw them out because they sound like a lot of, okay, so I've been to the American Bar in London, of course, but some of these places really sound like a lot of fun. And I want to know if you've been there. So first off, the Clumsies. Number three bar in the world, the Clumsies in Athens, Greece. What do you know about the Clumsies? Because I love the name.
It's a wonderful place. Personally, I've not actually been, but every person who I've spoken to who has, it's just a really, I mean, the Greeks are known for wonderful hospitality and welcoming spirit, and the Clumsies is an embodiment of that. They're so friendly and so welcoming that they'll even give you the recipe to their best cocktails to go away with. And that's after many years of secrecy and intellectual property on recipes, it's just wonderful to see a bar that's so open-minded and so open to their consumers, their guests coming in and just having a great time, that they'll give the shop away with it.
Maybe Sammy in Sydney, Australia.
Maybe Sammy. Again, it's fortunate. It's one that I haven't been to, and that's the winner of the Michter's Art of Hospitality Award this year. But they're doing wonderful things, and particularly their style of hospitality, which is really interesting this year. They've kind of torn up the rule book of what's traditionally accepted as gold standard hospitality in cocktail bars and hotel cocktail bars. What they'll do, the guests will come in and they'll leave them, let them settle down a little bit, and then they'll go and present them with a toy, like a gun which fires bubbles or just something ridiculous, which kind of disarms the guest. And in such a sort of clean lined, beautiful cocktail bar, it puts people a bit off ease, but then they go on to having one of the best evenings that they'll ever have. And it's a great bar, and it doesn't hurt that it's in the Rocks in Sydney, which is a beautiful spot any time of year.
I have such conflicting emotions right now, because part of me is excited, you know, you hear about that, and then I just get sad, because I think, when am I going to get to go to this place,
mate,
man?
Tell me about
it. I'm looking at this list right now. So here's Drink Kong in Rome, Italy. Drink Kong. What do you know about Drink Kong?
Yeah, he's run by a guy called Patrick Pistolesi, who actually spent a lot of his career working in New York. And he's half Italian, half Irish. So you can imagine the hospitality spirit is rich in that one. He's
right here. Dunn is my last name, and my father and my mother's Fabrizio.
Ah,
hey, right down the middle, Irish Italian. So you don't have to tell me anymore.
There you go. I'd put you in, well, get in touch with Patrick. He'll host you more than amicably. And that's a great sort of neon focused bar. So that, similar to Katana Kitten, the bar that you mentioned at the top, it's kind of cut in the hybrid of Japanese bartending style, but mixed with a bit of Blade Runner, lots of neon in there. It's just really interesting, beautiful, but idiosyncratic space that sort of embodies the 50 best list this year, actually.
Really sounds nice. Like such a great spot. Now, this is an interesting name. In Shanghai, China, Sober Company. Tell me about that one.
ironically named, actually, that one as well. It's run by a guy called Shingo Gokan, who actually spent a lot of time learning his craft in New York as well. He arrived in New York without a word of English to his name. And learnt the language from the ground up, just from listening to his patrons' conversations and shaking bars, shaking drinks. But he's gone back to Asia to open launch a few bars and sober company is what he does. He specializes in multifaceted spaces. So that particular bar has got four different venues inside one. So it's kind of place where you start at the bottom and end up at the top a little bit worse for wear, but ready for a cigar.
Now, let's go back and talk about the number one bar, and I'm sure you probably patronize that place because it is in your hometown of London, Connaught.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to go to that one. That's run by a guy called Agostino Peroni, who's sort of risen the bar from the ground up as well. He joined in 2008, and he's made the bar very much in his own image, and it's focused on any number of classical drinks, but where they've really sort of set their stall out is with their martini. Now, the martini is a drink with only three ingredients, as most of your listeners will know, and they've sort of elevated that to art form, and they've got a trolley which they will deliver the service to the guests and the guest tables, and they'll arrive and then they'll ask for which kind of combination of bitters and gin and vermouth they might want to mix into their drink, and they make it a very, very personalized experience and service. And yeah, and with Agostino and his colleagues Mauro Miller and Giorgio Bargiani, they're probably the holy trinity of Italian bartenders, which right now everyone is aspiring to be to.
What's the other famous spot though in London for martinis, where everything's frozen? The Savoy, right?
Yeah, the American bar at the Savoy is which won the world's best bar title in 2017. They're also very well known for martinis, but that's one of the bars which is still actually currently shut through the pandemic, and they'll be reopening in early December with hope that they might be able to make a bit of the Christmas crowd. But yeah, they're also known for an excellent martini.
Now, understanding that you have to be diplomatic about this, but you show up. Let's post pandemic. You fly to New York. What's the first bar you're going to go to?
That's a very, very tough one. But I think it would probably be Nomad Bar.
The Nomad Bar in the hotel there. Yeah. So
yeah, in the hotel with Leo Robicek. He's a good friend. So it'd probably be more to catch up with him. He's actually suffered for he caught COVID through the right at the beginning of it. Actually,
oh, I didn't know that. I know Leo too. I wasn't aware that he got it. He's okay now.
Yeah, he got it. I hope you wouldn't mind me saying, but yeah, I think he got it actually quite bad. But he's okay now, and he's actually in London launching Nomad in London. So I think he's probably pretty much recovered. But yeah, just to catch up with him and enjoy that bar there. It's a beautiful
All right,
place.
So now you leave the Nomad bar. Where are you going next? Let me throw one out. What about? I think you might get onto the Dead Rabbit.
Yeah, I'd happily go into the Dead Rabbit any day of the week and twice on Sundays to enjoy the hospitality there.
Do you have a favorite dive bar in the United States?
So many. I can't remember, actually, to be perfectly honest with you. They're the kind of bars which I'll go into at the end of the night and then probably won't think too much about them until.
Are there any cities that are maybe not, you know, we've already talked about Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York. Do you have any other favorite drinking cities in the state, like, you know, that jump out at you?
So certainly I think the whole area around Miami is really, really coming up now. And this might be a little bit controversial to say, but I think some of the cocktail bars in Vegas are really, really up there with the best in the world, particularly in the style of service that they offer and in terms of the bartenders that they can recruit as well. There's the Electra in I can't remember, I think it's in the Bellagio, which is just it's majors in mezcal and agave spirits. And it's the kind of bar which you don't expect to find in Vegas, but yet does things really, really well.
Yeah, no, Vegas has a bunch of them. I would throw a few other cities. I mean, New Orleans has such a great...
Yeah, absolutely.
New Orleans has such a great scene. We mentioned Denver. I think Washington, D.C. certainly has got some places. Boston. But yeah, it is going to be really interesting. And that would be what I guess I want to leave with, Marcus. As someone who knows bars, you study bars, you're with World's 50 Best Bars. What do you see, say, 3, 4, 5 years down the line? We talked about COVID and the impact it's going to have. What are some of the major changes, new things that you see coming down the pike in the bar world?
Yeah, good question, actually. I think that the main thing that I'm sort of starting to see the very early germs of is sort of cocktail pairings with food and high-end restaurant menus. So, I mean, what we've seen, particularly in the last 18 months, there's a lot of lower ABV serves, low to zero alcohol drinks, whereas you couldn't previously match a tasting menu to a cocktail as you would previously with matching wines, because cocktails, you're looking at huge ABV where you'd probably be unlikely to get through six or seven of them. Now we're sort of being enlightened to a world of slightly lower ABV, more spritz, slightly longer serves. The cocktail and food pairing menu is really about to start its true genesis, to be honest. I think it's a really exciting time for bartenders, and the way they're looking at processes which chefs might use, such as fermentation, centrifuges, and various other sort of roto evaporators, which we're seeing now behind all of the lots of top drinks which are being developed. So yeah, I think food and cocktail pairing taken to the nth degree is going to be something that's going to be really interesting to witness grow over the next 3 years. And of course, the rise of the celebrity bartender. We're already starting to see bartending shows, as we get in MasterChef in the sort of Iron Chef, which you get in the States. Down in South America, a number of bartenders, there's a very similar competition, which is like MasterChef, where bartenders will come on and create sort of idiosyncratic and unique drinks. And I think we're gonna start seeing a lot more of that in North America and Europe, as the bartenders will become as famous as celebrity chefs before long, I'm sure.
What about a virtual element? We're doing this over Zoom right now. Mm. I don't think this is going away. I was imagining a future where you could be in a bar in London and maybe they've got a big screen up, and somebody's going to steal my idea now, but you've got a big screen up there and you've got drinkers and exactly what you're talking about, the celebrity bartender. And like, hey guys, we're going to zap on over to San Francisco right now, where we're going to get a Tommy's margarita. And could you see something like that happening, where you're going to have people interacting in bars with people across the world?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, I think we've all been ingratiated to this software of Zoom. I mean, and it's not completely perfect, but the way it's brought the community together over the last 8 months has been invaluable. And it may be, if you look back sort of 5-10 years, it wouldn't have happened. There would have been a lot more isolation for bar communities all over the world. So yeah, absolutely, I could certainly see people tuning in to watch Julio making margaritas over across London. Yeah, I can definitely see that being a part of it. It's not going to go away. I think we might well, we're all a bit sick of virtual happy hours and drink along.
Oh, no, I love this. I don't like leaving my house. No. Well, that brings up an interesting point. What happens with next year's list? Because you're going to pretty much have a year where no one went to bars.
It's an interesting conversation, and one that we're having a lot of at the moment. But we've got a number of ideas on how we're going to keep it fair and equitable across the world. But because the situation with coronavirus is changing so quickly, we don't want to tie our colours to any particular mast and say, right, this is what we're going to do for 2021. We've got a few ideas. Our first event of the year is Asia's 50 Best Bars, which takes place in May. And we want something which can be rolled out fair and equitably across all of our franchises over the next year and beyond. So yeah, watch this space.
What do they get? They get a trophy? They get a cash prize? What do they get if they win what do the Connaught Bar get this year?
A trophy. A scarf. The bartender's red scarves, sponsored by Methusalem, they're sort of their biggest, the biggest accolade. Maybe they get a bespoke cocktail shaker.
Do they all get, who does everybody that works at that bar get one, get a prize?
No. So there's just two scarves per bar, one cocktail shaker and one trophy if they're lucky enough to win one of the bigger awards. But everyone gets a plaque to screw up outside the bar. But yeah, there's no cash prize, no financial incentives directly, but obviously the accolade of being the world's best bar sponsored by Perrier comes with its own accountability of getting lots of bums on seats.
And is it I know it was just held virtually, is it generally in November when the awards are always held?
Generally held at the beginning of October.
So there is hope that there will be an actual live ceremony in person next year.
If I could tell you how tightly my fingers were crossed for that, I wouldn't be able to give you enough of how sore my right knuckles would be. But it's we're absolutely hoping, we're really, really hoping that we can put on an event in person. Bartenders are the most sociable people in the world, and for them to have a year apart from giving each other sort of big hugs and sloppy kisses, it's very tough for all of them.
I am right there with you, man. I hope for nothing else than to be able to go and check out a lot of these bars. And for you, if you at home want to check it out, go to worlds50bestbars.com to check out the bars on that list and make yourself a little, what do they call those things when you put it up on the board? You try to visualize a dream. What are they?
Hello, a mood map.
A vision board. Make your vision board. So go to the list and print up some of those bars and put them up there and have a vision board. Say, I'm going to hit those and then get ready for next year's list. I got to tell you, Mark Sansom, the content editor for World's 50 Best Bars, World's 50 Best Restaurants, it's been great talking to you, man. It really has been a reminder of why I'm in this. You know, sometimes, you know, I joke about being stuck. I don't really want to be stuck in my house Zooming, but, you know, it's been a good long 7-8 months of this. And like you, man, I really miss going out. I really miss talking to people. I really miss engaging with bartenders and seeing what they're doing. And talking to you today has reminded me that it's coming. There is a light at the end of this tunnel.
Absolutely, Dan. Well, I hope to one day share a drink with you and we can enjoy it in person. But yeah, just to all your listeners, go out and support your local bars as soon as they become available. Because if we don't go and support them in their time of need, then they won't be there when we really need them to celebrate. So yeah, cheers. Thanks very much, Dan.
Mark Sansom, everybody. Thank you, Mark. As the host of a show called What We're Drinking, people often ask me, hey, what are you drinking? When it comes to American-made whiskey, my go-to is Rabbit Hole. The unique recipes were created by their founder, a guy named Kaveh. He and his team at Rabbit Hole spare no expense in making their bourbon and rye. They have their own cooking methods and use top-of-the-line grains. They never chill filter, and they use barrels that are toasted, charred, and wood-fired, which almost nobody does. What you end up with is a line of bourbon and rye with these really rich, deep flavors that are unlike anything you've ever tasted. What are you having? It's a question as old as the bartending profession itself. And if you ask me, the answer is Rabbit Hole. Okay, so the holiday season is here, and obviously this is a holiday season unlike any we've experienced before. Going to be real scaled back. No parties, no gatherings, no office shindigs. But you can still make cocktails at home and enjoy them and try to get the most that you can out of this holiday season. To that end, I'd like to offer a cocktail suggestion. Earlier this year, we did a two-part episode called The 20 Most Important Cocktails of All Time, and one of the ones that made the list at number 11 was the Negroni. Fantastic drink, and I chatted up the great Simon Ford of Ford's Gin. He's been in the booze business a long time. He knows his stuff. So I'm going to leave you today with Simon and I, a quick chat, a couple of minutes, just chatting about the Negroni. And I invite you to whip one up. If it's not Thanksgiving yet, make one on Thanksgiving and raise a toast to me, and I'll cosmically raise one back to you, okay? And if it's after Thanksgiving, hell, make an after Thanksgiving Negroni and enjoy yourselves, and I'll see you on the next show. But here's Simon and I.
It's more than just a cocktail. It's become a lifestyle. And in at number 11, it's a drink called the Negroni.
We'd love the drink. It's a very simple drink, right?
Very, very simple drink. So it was allegedly created at a Bar Cassoni in Florence, Italy. And it was definitely created there. The alleged part is that it was mistakenly made as an Americano. It was named after Count Camillo Negroni and who it was made for. And the history of it was captured by a bartender down the road called Luca Picci, who was at a place called the Cafe Rivoire, also in Florence. And so we have this history. We've been drinking this drink that essentially they added gin instead of soda water to an Americano. And here we have this drink that is a mixture of Campari, which has definitely had a major comeback with this drink, sweet vermouth, so nice sweet Italian vermouth, and gin. Equal parts. I think I liked up the gin, but then you knew I was going to say that. And I think that what's been amazing for me is I've seen the comeback of this drink, and I've seen how attitudes have changed to it. You know, when it was first being drunk by bartenders, it was in a similar way that Fernet Branca is, or Malort. You know, it was like this this coded, here's something pretty disgusting that you know, and it's evolved into something that we really like. I remember bartenders coming up to me and saying, you know, the great thing about a Negroni, is you could never mess this drink up. You could go into a dive bar and you could ask them to just put these three ingredients in with their bad ice, and they could stir it with your own finger and this thing would taste good. Of course, you and I both know that that's bullshit, but that's how we were drinking Negronis at the beginning of this craft cocktail movement. We were literally going to any bar.
Well, you know, you talk about the beginning of it. The very first time I ever had it, way back in 2000, I went to Turin, Italy for the Martini Grand Prix of bartending. And one of the people that was along on the trip who I just met then was now become a dear friend, Dale DeGroff. Dale is arguably the most decorated bartender alive in the United States right now. And so Dale introduced me to like a wealth of libational pleasures when we were over there in Turin. And it really kind of opened my eyes to the beauty of a well-made cocktail. So at his urging, I tried my very first Negroni at Cafe Torino in Turin, Italy. And then I had my second and my third, and it was a revelation. You know, again, basic, it's gin, sweet vermouth, and Campari. But when you stir it together, it is a delectable aperitivo. And and remember the orange twist garnish. It's a sacred and essential component of this cocktail. If you're tempted by lemons, resist.
I have to say that it's funny that you said it was Dale, because I watched Tony Aberganum, another great bartender that really helped kickstart the bartending scene, and Jack Bezuidenhout, who is based out in San Francisco, just constantly tell bartenders, you need to drink this drink, you need to drink this drink. And I swear to God, if they don't have shares in Campari, I'm not sure what their motives were. But Jack even went on to create something called the 10 Negroni Club, where he would go around with this giant cocktail shaker and with 10 friends and have them make 10 Negronis. And he was like converting people one after the other. And I think this is like 2002. And now it is probably... yeah, the most popular bartender drink we know of.
I would say so. Our old friend, the late great Gaz Regan, Gary Regan, was a Gary wrote about that in his. He wrote a book called The Negroni, Drinking to La Dolce Vita, and really got into it. And if Gaz loved that drink, I love that drink, and that's why we put it at number 11 on our list, the Negroni. Simon, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.